want to start out with telling people why you need to learn the survival, in that we live in Alaska, of course, and there are times when we are traveling that you can, things can happen that you aren't prepared for. So we have to get prepared and know what to do in order to last until we can get rescued or get back home. All the time I see people getting on the airplanes in their jeans and their tennis shoes and little life jackets. You can fly in a very short period of time and get to where you cannot get back easily. So whenever I fly, I usually wear all of my stuff that I need to survive. Now, as far as learning to survive, it's real important that you prepare beforehand. Now, as far as preparing beforehand, you need to prepare yourself mentally. And by mental preparation, I'm talking about getting the right attitude. Now, as far as people that have been in survival situations, the ones that have survived and done well had a proper attitude. But what do I mean by proper attitude? They had a will to survive. They wanted to survive. They acted like survivors, not victims. Now, what does that mean to you? It means that if you get caught in a survival situation, you need to keep from being depressed, you need to keep active, and you need to do what we call the 7 steps of survival. Now, there's also physical preparation, as far as physically getting yourself prepared. I used to work with the Mountain Rescue Group, and when we knew we were going to go out on an exercise, I would make sure that I was properly rested, I'd been eating properly, and I was properly hydrated. By that, I mean I was getting my body prepared to go out into the cold, usually the cold, and spend time. We were doing lots of exercises. We went out on a few search and rescues. But if I knew I was going out the next day, I'd make sure I get lots of rest, ate a lot of food to where I had energy to burn to keep warm and to have the energy to be active and to stay hydrated. By that I mean drinking plenty of water. And those are probably the most important 3 things you can do for your body to get it prepared to go out into the field or out into the woods. Also, you need to get the proper survival skills. And by that, you can do that by talking with your parents, spending time with your elders, especially the elders. They were around when they needed these skills. These were not survival skills per se. These are just normal everyday skills they used all the time. They have a great deal of information they can give to you. So listen to what they have to say, because they didn't get to be old by being foolish. They got to be old by being smart and surviving. Also, you need to get a certain amount of survival equipment. The most important thing you can have is the knowledge to do what you need to do. But up here where it's cold, without the proper equipment, you're going to be at a tremendous disadvantage. And we're going to cover a lot of the equipment tonight, but I just wanted to let you know that's part of preparation. No one expects to be put in a survival situation. When you get up in the morning, you go down and get in the airplane, you expect the airplane to take off, to fly where you're going to go, and to land. What I can tell you is sometimes it doesn't do that. Sometimes you get up in the morning, you get out and get in the plane, it takes off, and doesn't make it. I was in an airplane accident, actually 30 years ago. We were flying an airplane up on the Tasmania Glacier when it crashed. I was in one of the very last flights out that day. We were taking all of, we were doing sheep hunting. We were sheep guides for a family from Idaho, a doctor and his family. And we'd flown out the equipment, flown out the guides. I was the very last person to go out. And the next flight in was going to have all the food. And I was like 19 years old. I was the youngest person there. And as we were packing our packs, I'm putting all this food in my pack. And feel like people who are, you know, kind of laughing at me, what are you putting all that food in your pack? I says, well, you know, I don't go out in the woods without food. And the food's all going to come, you know, I guess, Well, when the plane crashed and we couldn't get back to get the food, all that food that I had in my pack became very valuable. I missed out on a great chance. I could have sold saltine crackers for $10 a piece. You know? The point is, I did not go out unprepared. It was a week before we could get food. I had taken in 8th grade my science teacher, Roy Biffle, who became a close friend of mine later on in life, who was a big game guy. He's my 8th grade science teacher. Took 2 weeks out of his curriculum and says, you know, this is not part of your science curriculum, but you live in Alaska. You have to know this information because there will be a time, if you live up here, there will be a time when you will need this information to survive. And so he taught us how to survive. He taught us what foods to eat, what equipment to take, proper attitudes, all of these things. Now, when we were in the survival situation of the Boca Tasman Glacier, I was prepared mentally and physically, and I had all the equipment I needed. So I felt very comfortable. My dad, who was along, he was very comfortable, as was the other guy. The people from Idaho, on the other hand, it was a very stressful situation for them. They were way out of their comfort zone. They, even though they had the equipment, they didn't enjoy the experience. They missed out on a tremendous opportunity to expand their comfort zone. When we ran out of the crackers and some of the odds and ends that I had, I left the camp. I said one day, well, I was leaving. He said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going up on the mountain. You can't do that. What if somebody comes to bring us the food? Just pull the trunk off the food, and I'll walk down and eat it. But in the meantime, I'm going up on the mountain. So I left, and I found a great big huge patch of blueberries. And so I'm sitting down in the sun, eating blueberries. I was just full. And looking down 2,000 or 3,000 feet on these people out on the rocks, they were very hungry, they were very stressed out, they were very afraid. They were so afraid they wouldn't leave the camp. What comfort they did know they wouldn't leave. And as a result, they spent a very hungry night. I had a great time. My dad came up late, and about 2 in the morning we shot a sheep that came down. And butchered the sheep and brought it back down. So the next day we had food down. And we did just fine. Finally, the person who was supposed to bring in the food brought in the food, and everything was okay. I had a very good time. It didn't bother me. It was a challenge, and it was nice to be able to meet the challenge and not be afraid. Now, let's talk about three of your enemies in the out in the environment. Out in the woods, when you get out in the woods by yourself or with your group, there's three major enemies you have. One is fear. Actually, fear isn't necessarily an enemy. What does fear do for you? Any idea what fear does for you? If fear keeps you from doing really stupid stuff, you know? Are you afraid to run out in front of a big car? Well, yeah, you know, and rightfully so. It keeps you from doing something really stupid. And a little bit of fear is not a bad thing. But if you get so afraid, you become paralyzed with fear, like those people were. They were paralyzed with fear. They would not leave the camp because it was their all they knew, and it was their only link to civilization. They were outside of their comfort zone, leaving the camp. I spent the night up on the hill, sleeping under a rock. I had a great time. I didn't freeze to death. I was full. I had a good time. They spent a lot of, like I said, very very hungry night in the nice warm camp. A little bit of fear is okay, but too much fear to what paralyzes you is a major problem. panic is another one of your major enemies. And by panic, I mean you don't know what to do. A lot of times when people panic, it's kind of a disorganization. They know they need to do something, but they don't know what to do. And they'll start this and they'll, no, I'll do this, well, no, I'll do this, and they end up not doing anything. Panic is a major problem. Anytime you panic, you have lost the ability to self-rescue or to help yourself. Until that panic subsides, you're of no value to yourself. And you're using a very important time, energy, and chances of survival. And the last major enemy you have out in the field, we might call it the field out in the woods, is depression. When people get really depressed, they lose their will to survive. Will to survive is one of the most important aspects of survival. There was a small fishing boat out in Cook Inlet turned over. This is a number of years ago. And it was a man and a wife. And they were hanging onto the boat, and after about 2 hours, the husband slowly slipped into the water and disappeared. And his wife held on to the bottom of the boat for 9 more hours until somebody came by and found her and took her back. And they were dressed the same. They were about the same size. There was not much difference in their physiology, in their bodies. Their bodies were very similar. There was one difference. She had a very strong will to survive. And they asked her, well, what kept you holding on to the boat when your husband gave up after 2 hours? She said, I didn't want anybody else raising my children. That's what kept her alive. She had a very strong will to survive. And she said, oh, when you get depressed, you lose that will to survive. Oh, geez, you know, I know I need to build a shelter. I know I need to get some water. I know I need to get a fire, but I just can't do it. You need to stay on top of it. Now, how to prevent that? Stay active. Do the things you need to do. It's very difficult to keep from being depressed. Oh, nobody's ever going to come. I'm just going to, you know, lie. You know, hey, you know, these things happen. Get over it. Do what you need to do and survive. Get busy. Those are the kind of things you need to do. Physiologically, they found that people that were depressed actually had a lower body core temperature. Someone has done a physiological test on people that became depressed and found that their body core temperature was lower. Which means if you're in a cold environment, you are up here, it puts you at much greater risk for developing hypothermia, frostbite, any of the cold injuries. Now, most people that die up here from exposure, it's called a die of exposure, people that get trapped up out in the woods on a survival type of a problem, they either die from drowning or hypothermia. Those are the two big killers up here, drowning and hypothermia. And we have that in great abundance around here. You've got the water, you've got the sea, you've got the ocean, you've got the lakes, you've got the rivers, and you have the rain. We have lots of water. Survival in the desert is a different type of a story. You have to worry about getting water in the desert and keeping from being too hot. Well, it's a different story up here. You don't have to look for water around here. Water will find you. You have to keep from being cold and to stay dry. So basically, in order to survive a problem out in the woods, you need the proper attitude, you need the proper equipment, and you need the proper skills. Those are the three things you need to do. Now, talk about attitude a little bit. Let's talk about the seven steps to survive. Now, Alaska Marine Safety Education Association has come up with some very good information, and that's what we're covering. As far as when you get in a situation, what would you think is the most important thing to, what's your first step to survive when you get into a problem situation? You've got honor. Very good. Number one is recognition. You have to recognize that you have a problem. You're in a survival situation. You get up in the morning, you're going to walk to Port Graham. You get up and you start walking through the woods, and you're going along, and you get off the trail. Because there's a great big huge pond of scum water, which I sank in up to my hips last year. It's out there. There's orcas in some of those big ponds up there. I'm just kidding. You go around one of these big swamps, and you don't find a trail. And so you're walking along, and it's raining, and you don't have the right clothes, and you're getting kind of cold. And, we'll just keep going. I know it's a distraction, and you keep going, and you keep going. And it starts to get dark, and you keep going, and you keep going. And all of a sudden, now it's really dark. Now you've got a major problem. The point is, you need to recognize you have a problem early enough to do something about it. As you're walking through the woods and it's still daylight, then is the time to stop and realize, geez, I'm in a survival situation. I have a problem. I need to do something. So stop, build a little shelter, make a fire, do something to keep yourself safe over the course of the next 24 hours. You have to recognize you have a problem early enough to do something about it in a timely enough fashion. You have to, what we call, stop. You sit down, think, observe, and plan. And what I'm talking about is when you sit, I should say just you need to stop what you're doing, and think about what's going on. Well, geez, I'm lost. Go ahead and finally admit it. I'm lost. I need to do something now. Observe. Look around you. If you're walking to Port Graham, what should you look for? If you see the ground rising, what direction should you walk? The other way. Because the rising ground's going up the mountain. Port Graham is down on the seacoast. Mm-hmm. So you should be going downhill instead of uphill. If you go downhill, you'll get to the seacoast. Once you get to the seacoast, you can follow it back either to Manawala or over to Port Graham. Mm-hmm. You go up and down some of those hills, yes. Yeah, it is a big hill, especially with a switchback hill. I know I've run up there a lot. But you have to just, observe, choreograph what's going on and make a decision. Come up with a plan. Well, gee, I don't have anything to start a fire with. I don't have anything to make a shelter. What would your plan be? Plan would probably be to make sure you go in the right direction and get home. That might be your best plan. Or if you've got something to build a fire with, something to build a shelter with, it's getting dark. Your best plan may be to make a little shelter and build a fire. I'll show you how to build a fire with something to build a fire. That might be your best plan. Whatever it is, sit, think, observe, and plan. You need to start. Okay, so number one, recognition. Number two is you have to take an inventory of what you have and what you need. Now, as far as an inventory, you need to consider critical health needs. Now, for most of us, that's not going to be a major issue. With people that have medical needs, that can be a critical issue. You've got somebody that's diabetic with your group, and they don't have their insulin or their diabetic medicine, you have a major problem. That's something to consider. Or you got, you know, that's probably not something you can do something anything about. However, if you have somebody that's hurt, that they've fallen in the water and they've gotten cold and wet, they have a critical need. You have to take care of that. So one of the inventories is one of your major problems is one of your people's fallen in the water and they're wet and cold. What are you going to do about it? Stop. Light a fire, warm them up, dry out their clothes, and then you can continue on. Mm-hmm. You have to look at what's going on in the environment around you. What are you going to need around there? Is it raining? Is it a warm sunny day? Is it cold or wintry? Is a blizzard starting to come in? If it's a warm sunny day, well, you can keep walking. If a blizzard is coming up, part of your stop, sit, think, observe, and plan, you might want to stop and build a shelter. Something like that. You look at your equipment and survival skills. What we were just talking about. If you've got the equipment to stop and the survival skills to build a fire, build a shelter, that may be your best plan. If you don't have the equipment, don't have the skills, on and on, keep moving. Things like that. Now, let's talk about shelter. What's your primary shelter when you go out into the woods? Yeah, we built that shelter. Remember that? Mm-hmm. That was a good time. Yeah, we built that shelter. Yes. Mm-hmm. However, your primary shelter, your first shelter, when you go out into the woods, is what you're wearing. That's your primary shelter. In other words, you have to have the right clothes on. Now let's talk about the right kind of clothes. Most of the clothes we have nowadays made out of cotton. This is a nice cotton shirt. What happens with cotton, when it gets wet, the fibers absorb the water and the fabric collapses against you and is wet and takes the heat from your body and radiates it, and with the water evaporating, it takes the heat right out of your body. You get very cold when you have cotton clothes and they get wet. Blue jeans are cotton. Here's where cotton is no longer king. Cotton's a very nice fabric. However, when it gets wet, it will not keep you warm. There's other kinds of fabrics. Any of the, what we call the synthetic fabric, polypropylene, the capillene, there's all any of the pile fabrics. These are basically petroleum-based fabrics that do not absorb water. When these get wet, the cloth will not collapse against you. It will keep you warm even though it's wet. Wool is also a very good fabric. Once it gets wet, it will keep you warm. I have wool gloves. Wool will stay warm even when it's wet. The problem with wool is it absorbs a lot of water and it gets real heavy. I was canoeing one time when it was snowing. And I had on my wool pants and my wool shirt and a wool coat. And I jumped in my canoe and it tipped over and plopped me in the water, which is no big deal. My two friends were there. They laughed and laughed. They thought it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm glad someone was there to enjoy it. And I didn't get cold. I wasn't cold, but I weighed about 300 pounds when I came out of the waters. So I got rid of my wool, and I've gone to the synthetic fabrics. This is Polartec. the specific kind of fabric. There are different kinds of Poetech fabrics. And what I will tell you is not all of these are the same. There's Poetech 100 fabric, there's Poetech 200. This is Poetech 1000 fabric. This has a wind barrier in it. This is a very, very nice garment. This garment probably saved my life one time. I was canoeing down the Kenai River, down the canyon, in May. Yeah, wind was blowing, it was raining, it was about 40 degrees, and I dumped my canoe. I'd been going down that river for 20-some years, and here's where you have to be very careful. I've been doing this for years and years and years and years. When I called a friend of mine, I was coming down from Anchorage, I called him, he says, let's go paddle canyon. Okay, so he met me with his boat. And when I got there, I didn't have my life jacket. My life jacket wasn't in. I'd forgotten my life jacket. Oh, man, you know. Well, I've been doing this a long time, you know. I've never had any trouble. I can probably do this without a life jacket. That was what went through my mind. But just, you know, there was just something back there going, this is stupid. This is stupid. You can't do it without a life jacket. In the back of my truck, I had a spare life jacket. I went rummaging through my truck, came up with my spare life jacket. Okay, I'll do it. So I got my life jacket. I'll be honest, I had on cotton clothes. I had on blue jeans and a cotton shirt. In my, you know, my cotton. I was not prepared for survival. However, I took this. And I took the very, very minimum I needed if I got wet. And I put it in my canoe and I put it in a dry place. Sure enough, I hit a big rock, I sank the canoe. I spent 15 minutes in the water swimming down through the canyon. I got very cold. I got very, very cold. And to make a long story short, got out of the water, got my canoe, got out of the water. I was shaking uncontrollably because I was becoming severely hypothermic. I got rid of my cold. In fact, I've had this on too. I got rid of my wet cold shirt, and although I didn't have any other pants, I had this windbreaker on, and I put this on. I put this on top of this. Within 5 minutes, I quit shaking. I was warm. I warmed up because I had the right kind of. I did have this on. One of the ways you get real cold is when you have wet clothes on, that water evaporates into the air. When it evaporates, it takes a lot of heat with it. That's how you lose most of your heat with wet clothing, is through evaporation. It takes a tremendous amount of heat with it. So, if you get wet clothes, you're better off taking the wet clothes off. You're better off being naked out in the woods than you are with wet jeans and wet shirt. Cotton. If it's some of this, some of the synthetics or wool, you're better off to put on. So, anyway, by having the proper equipment, I was able to do okay. Now, this was my primary shelter. This is what I made sure I had my primary shelter. So, if you have the right equipment, if you have the right clothes, you don't have to worry about building a little, you know, building the spruce bough shelter, things like that. Although those are very nice things to have. So this is your primary shelter. Have the correct clothes with you at all times and be prepared to use them. Now, fortunately, I was able to recover my canoe because I had this. If I had not been able to recover my canoe, I could very well not survive. So, anything you have for survival needs to be on you at all times. Which is why I have the minimum stuff I need to survive in my first aid kit. And I have a fire starter in a knife. And I have something here to start fires with. Mm-hmm. Oh. It's cotton balls with the Vaseline petroleum gel. No left one off here. But these have to be on you at all times. If you don't have it on you, you won't have it on your own. I had everything I needed on me except this. Did not have this on. I made a mistake, but fortunately I didn't have to pay this, the ultimate price. I was able to recover my canoe. I might not have been able to. It's very fortunate. It taught me a lot. So, that's your primary shelter, the clothes you have on you. If you can't, or if your primary shelter is not enough, you can build what is called a secondary shelter, which is what we built at Dogfish Bay. What do you need for secondary shelter? You need something that is dry, insulated, that will give you insulation, and is small. Yes, like those. Those are some examples of secondary shelters. Now, one of the things that's very handy to have with you is some kind of plastic. That makes those shelters waterproof. And it also, the plastic keeps the heat from escaping out into the cold. So any kind of shelter you build has to be thick enough, there has to be enough spruce boughs and spruce and branches to keep you warm and dry and keep the hot air, because you're going to be the only heat that's going to heat up that space. So you want a small space. And what we do is we put down lots of spruce boughs. If you can find some dry moss, put some moss on top of that. Put the visqueen or the plastic on top of that. Put another layer of visqueen on it and then cover it up with the branches like we did with Dogfish. So you basically have a plastic bag that's covered with spruce boughs and moss. That should keep you warm and dry. Or you can make a mound, like you said. That works out well too. So any of those shelters works well.
You need a basket for shelter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I usually carry some of those garbage bags with me. Okay. I'll show you some of the stuff we have.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps it warm, yes. And it makes a tremendous difference. If you use garbage bags to stay in, you want to make sure that you don't cover your head with them. For a couple of reasons. Yeah, you suffocate for one. But when you breathe into that bag, it will condense moisture inside it and you'll get wet. Like you should have your head and shoulders outside the bag to stay warm. That's one of the problems with sleeping bags. I teach high altitude medicine to the mountain guides. I never put my head completely inside my sleeping bag, even when it was 40, 50 below zero. I always kept my face and head out of the bag. I put on my wool stocking, balaclava, I think that's how it's pronounced, and a very good hat. Yeah, I know. It's the height of passion. Where you lose most of your heat is your head and neck. 50% of your heat loss will be from your head and neck at 40 degrees. If it's 5 degrees out, you'll lose up to 75% of the heat loss from your body. It's to your head and neck. Keep a hat that is warm and will keep the air from coming out. And if it covers your ears and can attach on your chin, that's even better. So I never put my head and face inside my sleeping bag. I'm kind of claustrophobic anyway. I didn't like to do that. But the people that did, they put their head inside their sleeping bags. In the morning, they would be wet. They'd be warm and they'd be wet. But then they would get out of their sleeping bag and the clothes would not have an insulation value. So yes, even worse, their sleeping bag was kind of wet. And they would roll it up. And then that night they'd roll it out, and it would be, you know, kind of frozen inside and cold to get inside. It would take them a long time to warm up their sleeping bag, and then they'd get inside again and it would get wetter. Every night it got a little bit wetter, it got a little bit heavier, and it did not insulate them quite as well. Towards the end of the trip, that could be the difference between surviving and dying up on the mountain. If your bag is warm and dry, you're okay. If your bag is wet and frozen, it can be all the difference in the world. So anyway, that's one of the reasons you don't put your head inside the bag. Now, another thing we need is signals. Why do we need signals? Get somebody to come and rescue us. Now, yeah, there's, when I fly, you fly over here. This is a jacket I wear. You'll notice when I'm walking around the village, I don't wear this jacket. This is a stormy seas jacket. It's a life preserver in that it has the, yeah, you can blow this up here. It has the CO2 tube on it. Pull the lanyard and it inflates and makes a life jacket. So if the plane quits and crashes in the water and you survive the crash and you can get out of the airplane, I'm going to swim to shore. I will get to shore. That's my attitude. I'm going to survive and I'm going to get to shore. There are some things I do when I get in a plane to ensure that. Yes?
Do you stay warm inside the jacket when you swim back to shore?
It's cold. But it's a lot better than not having it at all. I will have a chance to get to shore with this because this will keep me, give me flotation. When you're really cold, you tend to lose your energy. And if you do not have flotation, you will drown in a fairly short period of time. With this, this gives me hope. You know, we're not miles from shore. You should be able to swim to shore within 15 to 20 minutes if you survive a crash and can get out of the aircraft. There are some things that I try to ensure my survival when I get in the plane. If I can, I'll get in the back of the plane next to the door. That's easy. If you're next to the door, you're the first one out. I also try not to get in front of the great big heavy thing they put in the back. I'll get let somebody else get in front of the great big heavy thing, and I'll get another step. Because if it crashes, it's going to go forward and squish it. One of the things we learn to do in airplane crashes, just before it crashes, you open the doors. The reason you open the doors is when it hits, it doesn't jam the door. Open the doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do what airs are pretty
poor? It has a compressed air cylinder and it blows up. There are bag, like balloons in here. And it blows up. And the reason I don't have it blown up before you get out of the plane is it makes it harder to get out of the aircraft with this blown up. So this I can just wear it, and it's just fine. It's a coat. It's a fairly decent coat. It's also a life jacket. And they tell you, you know, use your seat cushion as a life jacket. Well, I'm sorry, that's not good. I have a nice life jacket. For my survival kit, if you don't have it on you, you will not have it with you. If you have a survival kit, to be a survival kit, it has to be on your person. Now, what do I have in my survival kit? I've got this cool book, Wilderness Survival. I also have something that shows me how to make snares out of water. Here's some of the garbage bags, plastic garbage bags. A flashlight. Bright flashlight. Yeah. Have something to eat. Horrible. These don't taste very good. In other words, I'm not going to eat this unless I absolutely have to. I have a Snickers bar in here. Hey, here you go. This is horrible. This will give me a little bit of energy. I have my first aid kit. This is my first aid kit. I've seen a lot of medics, you know, they carry, it looks like a suitcase for a first aid kit. They could take care of an airline crash. If a jumbo jet crashed, they could probably take care of all of the injuries on the jet. This is my first aid kit. What do you need in your first aid kit? Band-aids, a little burn gel, a few blocks. If it's anything major, a little first aid kit is not going to help. Band-aids and little boobs. So that's what I keep in this car. In here, I have a storm shelter. This is my secondary shelter. This is basically a big, huge plastic bag. I can get inside it and stay warm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I also have another first aid kit in here. Yes. That's exactly, that's what it is. A very big, huge plastic bag. I also have a little mirror in here for safety. This will help. Yes, if you flash. Other things I have. And a whistle. It should be loud. It should be able to be heard a long ways away. Now that everybody's awake. Could very well be.
Yeah.
That's the only one I have. My hand is stuck in there. No, drown, I can get in shore. Oh, I've got the Vaseline. Yeah, Vaseline. Impregnated. Hot balls. Stuff for fire starter. Okay. Got another pot. One more pot. Hey, pemmican, all right, something else to eat. Although water is your major concern, you do need some food too. If you're without food for a couple of days, you're going to get very weak. And it's very hard to do a lot of the work you need to do. So I carry a minimum amount of food. Here's my flint. Oh, here's dye marker. We're in the water. What you do is you throw it out and it makes a big, huge orange dot out of the ocean. Hopefully they'll find you. I carry a stroke.
You can use
these
in the water.
You can use these in the water, exactly. Everything I have is able to be submerged. More cotton balls. And there's not a can of snuff. This is, remember when I cut the branch with this?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I use to cut the branches. Yeah, it's like you put these through there, and this works quite well. This is very, very effective. There's a lot of them out on the market that are just a wire with the little barbs on them. I found that if you use those too quickly, they heat up and they break. This is by far the most effective wood cutter that I have found. That's small and you can carry with you. And I only bought one because I thought, now I'll try it and see if it works. And it works really well, and I can't remember where I got it, and don't know where to get more. So, if anyone finds these, let me know. I want to buy a dozen. For me? So I'll have them as you pass it. And that's what I carry. And this is just a little this small and slide down and carry. In order to make higher.
Whoa.
Yeah. Now, I was a river rafting guide for 25 years. And one of the things people would ask is, would you teach us something about survival? And I would tell them exactly what I told you. But you need to be able to start a fire within 5 minutes of getting to shore. And everything you have to survive has to be on you. Okay, they go, So we would come to and land to camp for the night. And we'd get out and say, okay, here's the scenario. The raft just flipped over, or out here it could be the boat flipped over. We're saying. And you just swam to shore. Everything else is gone. What you have in your pockets is what you're going to need to survive. In order to survive, you need to be able to start a fire within 5 minutes to dry out and warm up. So, go ahead and start your fire. So they gather the little twigs and the kindling and all of the stuff they needed, and they bring out their thick light. He says, no, you just swam to shore. But then I had a 5-gallon bucket of water, and I'd throw their thick light in the water. And it doesn't work when it comes out. You have to dry out flint for the big light to work. There we go. Some of them had waterproof matches.
Oh, it's another
kind of where we can get them. Some of those work. The problem with waterproof matches is the little paper container that came in with the little striker on it, when you submerged it, it came apart. So when they tried to strike their waterproof match on the striker, it would not work. And a lot of those matches only can strike on the striker that's on the box. They won't strike on the rocks. Those were up. A few people have some matches that work. This always gives you a flame. Now, with the... And you get your tinder, and you get your kindling, and you get your small sticks, and you get your large sticks. Before you start your fire, you get enough wood to keep it going for quite a long time. Because once you get it going, you don't want to have to run out in the woods and try to find some more sticks and have it go out. So you get all the wood you need to keep, get your fire going, and then you get ready. You protect it from the wind. And this will burn for quite a long time. You have your kindling, your tinder, your tinder, and your stuff on top. Once your fire starts, so you don't have any sprinkler systems or alarm systems, once you get your fire started, put a little bit of kindling on, let it burn for a while. Don't just keep piling wood on top of it. Let it burn, let it get hot, let it start to make some coals and get warm, and build it up slowly. You can smother a fire real quick. So once you get it going, you've got it protected from the wind, you've got a nice spot, you've got your fire. This will burn for quite a long time. So burn.
What is a burn in a pan?
I won't burn the can. That's why I put it on the can. This will burn up to 5 minutes.
Yeah, I have one of those orange guns on the shooting lock.
No, I don't have one of those. That's what these will do without the gun. No, those are better. But this I can put in my pocket. Here again, this is a survival kit, so it has to be on your person. The gun is probably in case. What's that? Yes. The gun is probably in a case like this or something like that, and it will be considered a comfort kit. In other words, it will be equipment you have that will help you be comfortable, but it's not necessarily a survival. It's something that's not in your pocket. Okay. Now, all the stuff came out of my pocket, this is my survival kit. Because I will have it when I need it, because it's in my pocket, it's on my person. Okay. Now, there are some things that we call a comfort kit. In other words, it's stuff you need to stay comfortable. And what's some things in here? As you can see, I have all the stuff printed on the labels. Everything is printed on what's in here. Everything is printed in some of my other comfort kits. Some of the other things, I've got the space blankets. I've got smoke. These make the orange smoke, where you can see the smoke. Again, this is a signal. I have a little better first aid kit. I have a picture wire for making snares to catch the rabbits. Yes.
Can I also have a limit though?
Mm-hmm.
Can we catch rabbits
Yeah. And that will help you. Here's something else for starting fires. It's a fire ribbon. It's for putting around primus stoves to heat up the element to where it will vaporize the gas. This also works very good for starting fires. I call it napalm, too. Mm-hmm. No, this will just, you can just put this on right on the wood, and it will burn by itself. It's just a little gel. Whoa! There you go. Gotta watch out. It's just a patrol. Just a little patrol.
We should one of us for the fishing box. We can use it to catch a trout.
That's on the light sticks. One of the folding camp saws. It's very good for cutting wood. It's more effective than this, but this is, again, in a survival kit. This is in a comfort kit. You're not going to be guaranteed you're going to have this with you. this is in my pockets with me all times. This is better, but it's not necessarily with us. It may or may not be with me. Have some more of those things. Flashlights. Candles. These candles work very well for starting fires. I have some of the waterproof matches. Yeah, some of them do, some of them don't. I have a compass. I want to get lost. So these are just some of the things I have on this camera. Okay, here's this. Yeah, these are the folding scissors. But those are just some of the things in there. It probably won't keep you as warm as something that is. This is not necessarily a warm jacket, but it is flotation. Is it? Depends on what it is. Yeah, it will help. But the synthetic fabrics are by far the warmest. Wonderful. Okay. Talked about signals. Now, the thing about signals, there's two kinds of signals. There are active signals and there are passive signals. By that I mean a passive signal is a signal you can build on the beach that you don't have to be there for it to work. You can write an SOS on the shore with like logs or rocks or something. How tall should the letters be? Should be very big. Yes, how big? The letter should be at least 18 feet tall, which is almost as tall as from here to the wall. It should be very tall. The letter should be very tall and very thick. Whatever you use should be contrasting in color to the background. If you have white beach stones, you should use black logs. Things like that. You can also have active signals. This is an active signal in that I have to be there to signal. A fire is an active signal in like three fires. Everything that comes in threes, three is the designated distress signal. If it's three fires, that indicates it's distress signal. If it's three of these, indicates it's distress. Well, if you shoot just one, indicates your distress. Yes? Yes, they are. Yeah. But probably you know. Well, if it was raining and somebody's flying by, yeah, she'd find yourself. The things with signals is they need to attract attention, and they have to let people know you are in distress for them to work. They have to attract attention and they have to let them know you're in distress. If you have a fire on the beach, someone can fly by, somebody's having a hot dog, roast. Somebody's having a camp out on the beach. If you have three fires, that indicates you are in distress and you need help. Now, you can also other passive signals, you can hang up life jackets. Or debris, you can find stuff on the beach and hang that up. Anything that will attract attention. Yes? Yes, if you happen to have it, a lot of times you don't, you won't have it much. But what you do need is something that will attract attention and let people know that you're in distress. Okay, the next thing you need is water. Water around here is not, like I say, not a major issue. finally got real sick one time. And so I treat the water. There are different ways of treating water. Boiling it is probably the most effective way of treating water to make sure it doesn't have any of the bacteria or other germs that will make you sick. Yes.